there was a barrier, I think, in getting a bigger or more traditional kind of brand to trust something like an email newsletter, which, you know, now seems like second nature, but in 2017, 2018 was new and novel and different and right. something that didn't have a lot of statistics to back it up. So we had to kind of get over that barrier of showing that they could trust us, showing that we knew our stuff, that we had a really engaged community and a really engaged audience. And then it was really I think the differentiator was letting us be creative and kind of letting us run with the big ideas that we had. And it is always something that I have valued in partnerships, when you can find that partner who says, I trust you, you know your audience better than anybody. As long as we hit point A, point B, point C, do your thing.
Welcome to Partnership Plus, your go-to source for modern partnership wisdom with your host, Phil Hayes St. Clair.
Hey, it's Phil, and in this episode of Partnership Plus, we're talking to Kinsey Grant. Kinsey is a journalist who has spent a lot of her career in new media, and in particular, she was one of the first employees at Morning Brew, a daily news email service that grew to extraordinary proportions. Today, she engages in brand partnerships in new media, and we're going to talk about what it takes to build fantastic brand partnerships across creative brands. So, without further ado, let's meet Kinsey. All right, today we have a very special guest, Kinsey Grant. We're going to be speaking about a publication and a journey which I have been a long time fan of. We're talking about Morning Brew, and we're going to get to that in a second. But Kinsey, you have spent a great amount of your career to date doing some really interesting in new media, and have a bit of a penchant for brand partnerships. So I'm very, very keen to dive into this, because I think a lot of people don't really understand what a brand partnership is and why it makes sense to invest so much time trying to find the right ones. So before we get to that, though, let's dive into your backstory, because it's a pretty interesting one.
Of course. Thank you for having me, Phil. I'm excited to speak today. I love brand partnerships. It's a huge part of the business that we've built over the last 3 years at Smooth. And I hope that I come at it with an original perspective, given my background and my focus on content. So that's really where I kind of do my thing. And it's hopefully going to give me some extra special insight. But to your question about the background, I'll try to give the truncated version of my life story in as little time as possible. So I actually got my start. You mentioned new media, and that is where I have focused my career for the most part. I would say like 90% of my career has been really in the quote unquote new media space. But I actually started my career in what we would consider to be more traditional media. From a very, very young age, I wanted to be a news anchor. That was always my dream job. I continued to pursue that in college. I got a business journalism degree. I was doing the broadcast show at my school every week. I was, the quintessential news anchor with my power suit and my crossed hands at the news desk. And it was great fun. I loved it. I really enjoyed it. But I took a class my junior year of college called Reporting on Business. And I was immediately hooked on covering finance and in finance media in general. So graduation came. I was down to my two job offers that I was trying to decide between. One was a local news anchor job in Tupelo, Mississippi, and the other was a job covering the stock market in New York. I ended up going for the one in New York, spoiler. And that really kind of set me on a different trajectory that took me away a little bit from the more traditional career that I'd envisioned for myself. That first year in New York, I was working on Wall Street. I was working for Jim Cramer covering the stock market. It was like a lot of breaking news, and I was writing 20 stories a day, and it was crazy. And the team was like a ton of people all trying to, beat Bloomberg was always what we were trying to do. And I was a breaking news reporter, and I really enjoyed it. But eventually I got to a point where I kind of realized that I wasn't speaking to anybody who was anything like me. I was writing a lot of stories that kind of, to really sum it up, was like Tesla stock moved 3% today. That's really what it felt like. Felt like there wasn't a lot of accountability. There wasn't a lot of creativity. And I wasn't really speaking to anybody who was like me. I was at the time, 22 years old, living in New York, certainly didn't have disposable income to spend in the way these institutional investors who were reading my work were spending. So I wanted something different. As luck would have it, that very same week that I kind of made the mental decision to find a new job. I got a DM on LinkedIn from Austin Reef, one of the co-founders of Morning Brew. They were looking for a new writer. And you know, the rest is history, as they say. So started at Morning Brew as employee number 5 in 2018, just a year or so after the two co-founders, Alex and Austin, really went full time on it. And when I started, you know, it was really just honestly a stroke of luck. I was right time, right place, and the right risk for me at that moment in my life and my career. Started writing the newsletter when we were a team of like 2 people, and got a ton of exposure. Got to write the daily newsletter that eventually went out to millions of people, starting at a time when it was only going to about 200,000 people. Got to see it grow, got to participate in that growth. Eventually was an editor there, started and launched all the industry specific or B2B newsletters in those early days, and hosted the podcast, Business Casual. RIP, they've since pivoted. But that was the first foray into audio for Morning Brew, which was really exciting. In around 2021, a little bit after Morning Brew was sold to Business Insider, I made the decision to pursue something different, try something out on my own. Had a brief stint as a content creator myself before really focusing in on what we're building today, which is Smooth Media. I started it with 2 of my fellow Morning Brew co-workers, Josh and Jenny. And we've had an enormous amount of fun and learned so much in the 3 years since we started Smooth. I can give you the kind of like top line look at Smooth, but I don't want to jump ahead if that's where we're headed next.
Yeah, we'll get to it. I have to admit, learning about Morning Brew at some point, and it was very early on, and I don't think the idea of news coming through or very rapid emails, like at least daily, for news was a thing. And I remember thinking, what a convenient way to get the news. And then it matured over time to a point where not only was there an element of, I guess, breaking news humor that was part of the introduction of what was going on and just very clever writing, which I can now attribute in part to you. Then we end up with seeing it just sort of building out. And the maturity of that newsletter to grow from what it was to where it got to and to give people just such a different take was a massive shift compared to the normal news consumption patterns, I think, of people in the States, at least, and certainly people globally. What was it like at the point where you realized that, you know, and by the way, 200,000 people on a newsletter list is no small feat, but then when you start to grow so quickly, you know, what is that growing pain like? Because, and we'll dive into the expectations and what that was like in a second, but key challenges building out something like that? I mean, beyond the pace and tempo of writing multiple sub-publications there, tell me a little bit about what that was like in those early days, because I imagine it wasn't a big office where you guys were cranking pretty hard to get that information out every day.
No, it was a very small WeWork that we crammed like 12 people into a 6-person office. It was an enormous challenge, but I think one that all of us were really, really excited to meet and to rise to that occasion. At that time, many of the people on the team were pretty young. All of us were really excited about what we were doing. And we could sense that there was something good here. There was something different here that felt important and felt different and felt like there was a ton of potential. And ultimately, you know, many of us were right about that, which is amazing and wonderful. And again, was a real stroke of luck for me personally. But, you know, it to me in those days, the key differentiator was just a really, really ruthless amount of focus. We had very, very clear expectations of what we were doing. We had a very clear path ahead of us of where we wanted to go, what we wanted to be, who we wanted to be when we got there, how we wanted to be taken seriously in the broader kind of media ecosystem, by whether it was more traditional media companies, whether it was peers, whether it was, you know, partners or brand partners that we would be working with. We were just very, very clear on what we wanted, and we knew what we had to do to get there. Obviously, that included a lot of late nights, included a lot of, you know, doing things that don't scale. It included a lot of doing things that were not necessarily on your job description when you signed your offer letter, but we were all excited about that. And I think that having that team and building that team in the early days that was, you know, and at the risk of sounding like a total business cliche, was a lot of people who were willing to kind of be the Swiss Army knife of the team. We were all people like that. And I think it really made a huge difference in the speed with which we were able to grow, but also the amount of focus that we had as we were scaling. You know, there were moments where I can remember very specifically sitting in a meeting of the broader team, and it was at this juncture, at the end of this quarter, we're going to go from being an email company to being a media company. And that's a big distinction. Let's talk about what that means. And all of those plans were really laid out in a super clear way. So while it was challenging and required a lot of effort and hard work, everybody was excited about what it meant to get to that finish line, and what that finish line looked like, really, in essence.
You know, that that clarity of focus can drive people to a whole new level of performance, usually because they don't tend to get that level of clarity most days. So being able to sort of point in the right direction is and altogether is really quite something. And you mentioned before about going from sort of a newsletter to a media company. I imagine if we sort of just talk a little bit about those, the early brand partnerships, there was a point I remember as a consumer where all of a sudden you saw these reasonably large brands appearing at the top of the newsletter saying, you know, supported by, brought to you by. And, you know, what was that like to try and pitch to these very large brands who have never seen something like this before? Come and put your logo to give, I guess, authority to what we're doing here, but also to help fund what was going on. What was that conversation like in the early days? Because I imagine it became a lot easier to have that conversation after maybe, you know, 1 or 2 years where the traction, and you can see the curve of growth happening for the newsletter and people consuming, because I imagine the open rates on these emails were probably pretty high as well.
Yeah, totally. So, you know, I want to be clear that while everybody's kind of a seller in those early days when the team is like 7 people strong, I was mostly focused on the writing and on the content. But I think that the people who were doing the selling understood that what Morning Brew was at its core was something that was just really good content. You know, they respected the fact that we as a writing team took a lot of painstaking care and every single line that went out in that email. And they did a wonderful job of communicating that to partners. You know, in as, you know, honestly, as early as I can remember from my time at Morning Brew, we were included oftentimes, we as the content team and the editorial team were included in those conversations about what big brands we wanted to work with. We were all having big brainstorms about what, you know, now we kind of have like integrated marketing might be the label we would put on it, but how do we want to present ourselves to this giant company? You know, what can Morning Brew mean to Fidelity, which was a huge leap and one that ultimately worked out. But we had a lot of conversations about the storytelling that we wanted to do when we approached brands. We had a lot of conversations about what we could do that felt different. You know, there was a barrier, I think, in getting a bigger or more traditional kind of brand to trust something like an email newsletter, which, you know, now seems like second nature, but in 2017, 2018 was new and novel and different, right, and something that didn't have a lot of statistics to back it up. So we had to kind of get over that barrier of showing that they could trust us, showing that we knew our stuff, that we had a really engaged community and a really engaged audience. And then it was really I think the differentiator was letting us be creative and kind of letting us run with the big ideas that we had. And that manifested in a lot of different ways. You know, we had really creative ad copy. We had some really great sort of special moments, whether that was a gift guide or a standalone podcast series. And we got to be creative, and it is always something that I have valued in partnerships, when you can find that partner who says, I trust you, you know your audience better than anybody, as long as we hit point A, point B, point C, do your thing. And that's really what we're targeting today with the work I'm doing now. You know, it's we want partners like that. And I think having that early experience of Morning Brew, seeing that up close and personal, was just, you know, really, really instrumental in my approach to what partnerships could really mean.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, we talk about the idea of collapsing the time to trust. So, you know, whenever there is a starting point, you know, essentially there's 2 or 3 people in a room, which, you know, who don't know each other at all. And you come at this with best intentions, and we're hoping that that best intentions plus a track record means something can happen in the future. Were there things that you and the team were doing to try and collapse that time to trust, particularly in the early days of some of those bigger partnerships, to try and convince those bigger brands that, you know, we are worth dealing with? It's evidenced in the copy that we're putting out every day and the tempo we're keeping. But were there other things you had to think about to try and get them over the line?
So, you know, definitely having a strong open rate and having a highly engaged audience is huge. And that's kind of what gets your foot in the door. But I think at Morning Brew, we really fell back and allowed ourselves to fall back on the fact that we knew our audience so well. Like, we knew in and out what they were doing every day, what their behavior was like. We spoke to them directly. You know, we had, and for many, many years, we had something in the welcome email that was like, hit respond and answer. I forget what the question was, but Neil, who's is now the managing editor, Neil and I would respond to every single person. And that would sometimes be 1,000 people a day who subscribed. And we would respond personally to every single person who hit respond to that welcome email. And so we had that relationship and we had built that trust with our readers. And so we could then take that to the partner and say, we promise, we know them. We know that they like this, this, and this. We know that they get this joke and they don't get this one. We can be good stewards of your brand in a way that will resonate with our audience. And that resonance is really, I think, what they were after more than anything. You know, it was not necessarily just click-throughs or not necessarily just a brand awareness thing. They just wanted to resonate. They really wanted to speak to people in a language that they understood. And I think Morning Brew has and continues to really nail that and to know that audience so well, to know the role that you play in their daily routine. And it's been, you know, really valuable. And again, another lesson that we've taken from that time at Morning Brew into the work that we're doing today.
So that's a great pivot point then. So, you know, we have heard in the research we've done ahead of this episode, we heard a lot about what you talk about around community and trying to build out this idea that a successful brand has to have an element, a pretty strong element of community, so that the messages going out to that community can not only be received, but they can also be digested, thrown around, you know, built on, and it just helps build a level of authenticity in a brand. Why do you think that is so important for brands today, given that there are a lot of brands, there's a lot of attention splitting, there's a lot of stuff in the world that, and most of it is not great news. So, you know, what is it about community that you think is so important to your thesis?
So, you know, trying to speak to the internet, capital I internet as a whole, is like drinking through a fire hose, right? Like it's impossible. You're never going to get to the right audience if your audience, your total addressable market is 8 billion people, right? So what we have really leaned into and what we feel really confident in the future of is that more specific niche media. That niche can manifest in a lot of different ways. It can be, you know, personal finance or STEM or AI. Those are a lot of niches that we operate extensively in. It can be the creator economy. It's a newsletter that we operate. You know, there's a lot of different ways that we, as consumers of media, as people who are on the internet, as people who look at TikTok or Instagram or open their email, there's a lot of different ways that we can say, this is who I am. This is what I'm about. This is what I want to participate in and be affiliated with. I think that idea of community is really, really valuable because if you don't have it, you know, the internet is way too vast and way too broad for consumers to even get their arms around, let alone the partners who are trying to reach the right person to then get them to follow XYZ steps to move through the pipeline. So what we really love is narrowing that focus, narrowing that aperture, and saying, I am Kinsey. I am a reader of this newsletter because I care about this. And, you know, it could be my job, for example, is a great way that we have found to kind of niche down. So that specificity is something that just makes it all more palatable and makes the internet more consumable. But it also allows advertisers and partners to get that more specific approach to finding the right person for their product. Whether that's a B2C or a B2B brand, I think that in either case, having a specific idea of who your customer is and saying, you know, I want to speak to a 29-year-old woman who works in media and lives in New York. Like, there's an app for that, right? Like there's a newsletter, there's a podcast, there's something for that. And if you can find what that piece of media is and have a direct relationship with them, your chances of convincing that 29-year-old person who works in media and lives in New York to like your product, to know who you are, to talk about you at dinner that night, just increase, you know, exponentially. So that's really why community is so important to us, both from the consumer perspective and from the partner perspective.
I love that. I'm keen to dive into that even more because I think when people hear the word community, and I think I've heard you say this before as well, it can be quite a loaded term, right? So, you know, we think about Facebook groups right through to in-person communities, and COVID did a great job of sort of fracturing the foundation of a lot of traditional communities. And so when you think about a creator's community, it could be their TikTok following or their Instagram following or the way they do a lot of the commenting inside little community groups that are online. There's a lot of different types. We won't dive into those now, but you know, when you think about Smooth's mission and all of this amazing experience you've had coming into Smooth, how would you describe that to somebody who is unfamiliar with that brand? And if they were to come and work with your team, what would they kind of expect?
So at Smooth, we, for the last 3 years, have been building what we call the platform for knowledge creators. And that requires just a tiny bit of, you know, definition work. So when we say knowledge creators, we're talking about the kinds of creators whose core product is not necessarily their lifestyle or, like, you know, the clothes they wear, the apartment they live in, but more so something that feels educational and a little bit more tangible. So it could be, you know, the analysis of a certain industry. It could be insight into investment banking, where it's all kind of like smoke and mirrors, right? It could be a curated list of the coolest AI tools. That is really where we focus on education, analysis, insight, those kinds of big kind of monster words. But those are what we consider to be knowledge creators who are using the internet to publicly disseminate information and build community around some sort of piece of education or knowledge. When we say we're building the platform for them, essentially what we have at Smooth is sort of one half of the business. It's really focused on expanding and scaling businesses for knowledge creators. So we operate in a pretty, you know, I'd say traditional, you know, agency model. Creators come to us and we help them to find the best brand partnerships and the best, you know, strategic decision making for their vision of their future as a creator-led media company. So that's really the core focus of Smooth as a platform. And that's what we've been building for the last 3 years. We do sort of have another half of the business where we are building a portfolio of owned and operated media brands, business media brands. And that is sort of a slightly different beast, but is one that we're, again, very excited to leverage what we have learned about creators over the last 3 years of building Smooth to then scale what we've got going on, what we've got going on the portfolio side. So we can talk about that, I'm sure, at a later date. But I think community is something that feels really, really integral to both halves of that business. When we think about the work that we do with knowledge creators on the platform side, having a community that this creator understands is really like that is the bare minimum for us to consider working with a creator. They have to really know who they're speaking to. They have to know their audience. And it's less so about hitting a certain number of subscribers and more about knowing your niche, knowing what your audience expects and wants of you, and being willing to bring that forth into the world, which not everybody is. And so that has been a huge part of what we've built on the creator side. I think, you know, maybe even more dramatically on the portfolio side with these, you know, sort of traditional expectations of what B2B media looks like or professional or industry focused media looks like, it's stodgy. It's not super fun. It's often pretty boring and stale and dry, and trade magazines and boring conferences that you have to go to and speakers who aren't saying anything interesting. But what we think is that there can be a different approach to that, that B2B media can be great. It can be exciting. You can feel excited to say, I work in electric power and I love it. I love my job. I want to be an evangelist of my industry. And I feel that way because I know other people feel the same, because we're communicating on Energy Central, which is the electric power industry publication that we just acquired a couple months ago. If they can say, I met this cool person at this event that Energy Central put on, and now we're friends, and now we've talked and we've helped each other get jobs, or we've looked over some presentation that we're doing next week, that is enormously valuable. And I think something that has been missing from a lot of B2B media, it's like, it's just not that exciting. You know, who we are and how we spend our days are two things that are kind of core to the human experience. Not to suggest that work is all we do, but we spend a good chunk of our time sitting at our desk doing our jobs, or sitting wherever doing our jobs. And so we think that why not celebrate the fact that you can find community in that? Why not celebrate the fact that you can read a newsletter that tells you what you need to know to go about your day, and also says, you know, by the way, here's a cool job in grid stability in Texas or something. And to that one person, that could be a life-changing sentence to read in a newsletter. So we feel really excited about it. Obviously, I'm very excited about it, but I think that it all really does boil down to building that community. On the creator side, I would say that's really kind of core to the creator economy and has been as it's developed. On the B2B media side, it's something that feels a little more new and exciting. So, you know, there's a lot ahead of us, but we feel like that is it. Like, that's what we are so focused on right now.
Interesting when you sort of talk about this idea of strategic brand partnership. Can we tear that term down a little bit? Because on both of those two sides of that business, there is, I'm sure, a view about what that means to some people, and probably it's a bit of a misnomer to others. So, you know, Strategic brand partnerships, whenever we think about that, we're thinking about more of a campaign-driven alignment of two brands trying to think about what they achieve in sort of a short term. When you get to a strategic level, you know, when we look in the businesses that we work with, this is often, you know, a minimum 10-year play where there's a big infrastructure project or there is a new capability being built. In many cases, we don't know what the end game is going to be beyond what's been described and hoped and imagined for when two people or two companies come together. So when somebody says to you strategic brand partnership, and they look at you a little bit confused, hoping that they've got that right, how do you explain that back to them so they have a clear view about what that definition actually is in your context of new media?
Yeah, totally. So, you know, I think a helpful way to sort of frame this is understanding the motives and the momentum for each of the key stakeholders, I guess. And again, I'm going to sound like such a business school cliche, but like, if we think about, you know, a long-term partnership between one of the creators we work with on the agency side of Smooth and a sort of blue chip brand that wants to get into creators, but hasn't really done more than sort of dip their toes in working with content creators, we want to make sure from our perspective that it makes sense for both of those stakeholders. And, you know, if it makes sense for them, it probably makes sense for us as a business. But for the creator, they don't want to be out here like shilling some brand that doesn't align with what their audience wants. They don't want to tarnish their reputation. They don't want to try to sell you on something that you as a member of their community, as a consumer of their content are kind of like, that's weird. and this is maybe a elevated or magnified or dramatized example, but I saw something the other day about Sydney Sweeney, the actor who has like this partnership with Hey Dudes, the shoes that like, and no offense to people who wear Hey Dudes, but like my dad really loves them. And the difference there is like, what did their team say to her? And what did her team say to them? You know, I would love to have been sort of a fly on the wall where it's 20 something like actress who's really speaks to like these Gen Z audiences. And then like, Hey Dudes, the marketing department there, like how does that partnership make sense? I want to know, I want to understand a little bit better. I think it probably makes sense because there's just a big budget, but you know, I wasn't there, so I can't confirm. But for somebody in the creator shoes, we really want it to make sense. For the brand, it also has to make sense, right? Because they have a certain amount of budget. They often are kind of throwing money and hoping that something sticks, especially with creators. So because this still feels a little bit like uncharted territory in many ways, what we've done at Smooth is try to sort of like chart that path and make it a little bit more clear of what this can be for you if you choose to the brand, for you, if you choose to engage in a longer term partnership. It's not just, you know, throwing money at YouTube and hoping that you get 1 to 5 clicks, right? We're talking about longer term partnerships. We're talking about a brand play. We're talking about something that will really, you know, familiarize your brand with this content creator's content to their audience on a daily basis. We like that. We like the idea of partnering brands and creators that really make sense for each other. And we've had, you know, a wonderful track record so far of doing that and really sort of putting our money where our mouth is with the idea of long-term partnerships with content creators. It's something that I think gets again tossed around a lot without a super clear definition, or, you know, it's one of those words that sort of loses its meaning when you say it over and over and over again, this idea of long-term partnerships. But for us, it really is at the core of what we're doing. We know that a sort of one-off ad in a newsletter might not really resonate all that much if it's the first time these people are reading about it, if it's the first time they're encountering this brand's name. You know, on the flip side, if we can say an example here, the Published Press is a newsletter for, again, very meta, a newsletter for people in the creator economy. It's sort of the business of creators. The mission is to educate, empower, and engage content creators. We have had a lot of really great long-term partnerships at the Published Press that I think have made just a ton of sense for the brand, but they go far beyond just a one-off newsletter placement. We have, you know, events. We have an entire event series with Eventbrite, with Squarespace, with these kind of big brands that recognize that it's not just here's 75 words about your brand in a newsletter. It's saying, I'm going to do a whole you know, activation around how to host an event as a creator. And Eventbrite is a perfect sponsor for that. But it takes our team kind of pulling those different elements together, those stakeholders together. You have to identify this content would really, really resonate with the audience. And this brand would be perfect to talk about that and to help us to bring this to life. So anyway, that's sort of the long-winded answer of our approach to making sure that everybody is sort of bought into this idea that it's never just a one-off thing, or rarely is it a one-off thing. We want to have these longer-term investments, and we want to have these partnerships that really are rooted in knowing the other person, the other element of this kind of relationship between creator and brand partner.
It's such an important question to ask, which I find interesting that it's not the first question asked around why does this make sense? And I think as soon as people are asked that and they're given a minute just to sort of reflect on why it should be or shouldn't be, you get some very different answers. There was a couple of clients we had maybe early this year who were struggling with this pairing that had sort of been thrust upon them, and they were just they couldn't sort of bring themselves and the energy of their company to come to the table and actually be excited about what was going on. And the simple reason was it just didn't really make intuitive sense. And no matter how you cut the numbers or how you cut the strategic narrative around that, there just wasn't the connection to be made. So I think if you can't find a way to make it sense, then maybe it's a signal to sort of move into some other area.
Yeah.
Tell me about some of the most interesting ones that you've seen in terms of brand partnerships, because I find that sometimes the head-turning ones that make you go, huh, I did not see that coming. That is an unnaturally cool pairing of two brands that are doing something really, really fantastic. What are ones that sort of stay in your mind as being, that was really cool?
Yeah. So, you know, I mentioned some that we've done with the published press that I think have been really great. You know, we've been working with them. Published Press is a joint venture between Smooth and between Colin and Samir, who are two creators who cover the creator economy. We have had the privilege of working on that for just about as long as Smooth has been alive around. And so over those 3 years, we have had a lot of exposure to some of those really amazing partnerships. I mentioned Squarespace and Eventbrite. Those are some big ones. I think what has been really great for us as Smooth is when we can also bring brands into the fold that might kind of surprise the audience, but we know are going to really resonate. For example, our team at Smooth, we're like Notion obsessed. We use Notion for everything. It is like our number one most utilized tool across our team. And so we have a relationship with the company, with the brand, and getting to put that brand in front of, for example, creators who might just kind of be doing everything like on the Notes app on their iPhone, which, you know, if that's your thing, more power to you. But to say this is something that we can personally vouch for, it might surprise you that we're going to suggest a productivity app for content creators, but it really will work for sort of XYZ reasons. I love those. I love those moments when we can make that happen. But, you know, there's a ton of other examples, I think, from Smooth that have been really strong partnerships that you might not see coming. Another one that I had just kind of jotted down that I really love to see. And again, I didn't really have any hand in this, but to consume it as a consumer has been really fun. One of our creators with whom we work, her name is Sondering Emily. She's big on Instagram and YouTube. She is a game developer. So she makes video games. She really like documents her process of learning how to develop games and going through the creative ups and downs and ins and outs in this really wonderful and raw and vulnerable way. And she's just a really talented creator. She is big on sort of introducing maybe like a new generation and more women into game development. And so we had a partnership between Emily and Lenovo, which is again, like a huge brand for people who know tech. And that's a big part of her audience. But Emily worked with Lenovo to sort of like mentor another creator who wanted to start getting into game development. They were doing this. They did this like big shoot. It was multiple days. And that Lenovo was willing to sponsor something that might not necessarily have immediately a bajillion clicks on the Instagram reel about this. But they knew that over the long term, this was really going to resonate because you had somebody who was staying true to their story, who was helping somebody in a way that felt really natural. And you had double exposure from two creators. Like it just made a lot of sense and was something that I enjoyed seeing come to life. But you know, I do find myself now, after working in and around brand partnerships over the last several years, just like paying more attention to, and maybe this is a little bit of like negativity bias, but paying a little bit more attention to when things kind of feel iffy or weird. Like if a big oil and gas company is sponsoring like Axios Generate or something like that, like that kind of raises the red flags here of, I don't really know if that's the perfect match. This is about clean energy. And, you know, there's all sorts of interesting patterns that I think emerge as you try to consume content without the work hat on. It ends up just coming on anyway. But you know, there's tons. I also personally consume a lot more like lifestyle content creators content. And I think that there are some, you know, interesting partnerships. I mentioned Hey Dudes is one that was kind of funky. But you know, there are some that make a lot of sense. I think the team at Unwell, Alex Cooper of Call Her Daddy, her production company, I think they have managed to get some really, really cool partnerships that feel, again, very natural to the brand and to the audience, whether it's an alcohol brand or, you know, Burt's Bees, I think was a good one where Alex talks about it. And it just felt really, really natural. And I think those that feel, you know, surprising sometimes are good. But I also would maybe say that sometimes surprising can be bad. Like you want a pleasant surprise. You want to surprise and delight people. You don't want to be like, oh, it's weird that is in this newsletter. It doesn't really go with what I was expecting. So yeah, I guess like subverting expectations every now and then, but really understanding when to leverage them would be very important.
Yeah, it does feel as though there is a heightened awareness that we have now on just, you know, is that actually going to fly? I'm not sure if that's going to fly or not. And I, you know, two of the ones that I have loved, and it is funny, you also mentioned earlier about this idea about sort of the long-term messaging that will stick as a consequence of a partnership. I'm always surprised that, you know, two sponsors after we've finished on our newsletter, that I still receive emails from the company saying, oh, we've just received this uptick. And it's like, that was 5 months ago. Like, how is that still operating in the ether? I always find that mind-blowing how that can still persevere. But, you know, two of my favorites, you know, and one is a bit cliche, you know, the way that Red Bull and GoPro have decided to partner on such extraordinarily visual feats, you know, base jumping from space, you know, all these ones where you just go, it's just extraordinary how, one, humans will do that, but two, how it's captured in such vivid detail for the entire world to see. And I think the other one which came up in January this year, and I come from a rural background when I was growing up, and it was always a bit of a travesty to see people who work so hard to bring so much goodness to the world and just don't have the tools to do it in the middle of nowhere as they're, you know, raising crops and moving livestock around. And for internet to be such a pivotal part of their world to make it more productive and to make it, you know, more precise given all the things they're facing in the world. And along ultimately comes, you know, SpaceX. And it says, no, we can provide you with high-speed internet from the sky, where telcos just couldn't do that. And all of a sudden, you've got these two brands come together and people have gone, yeah, space company and John Deere who builds tractors. That makes a lot of sense. And it's just sort of, it's about time that this sort of made itself work. They're the kind of partnerships that I just go, this will be easily a decade plus, and the goodness that will come from it will be pretty extraordinary.
Yeah, totally. I think those are great examples. I feel like, and maybe this is again also like a little recency bias, but I feel like those sort of 10-year relationships, I always pay attention during the Olympics. I'm like a huge Olympics fan. We had to go to the office like the entire time. But like people watch the Super Bowl for commercials. Like I kind of watch the Olympics for commercials, and to see all the different activations and you know, whether it's like Procter & Gamble with a billion different brands that they're saying this is what Olympians' moms use to do their laundry. You know, those things that are really rooted in storytelling are so powerful and such a, I think, a joy to see unfold when they work, right?
Yeah, for sure. Look, can I just dive in on one example of that, which was hugely profound in our world? So we have two girls. And at the time of the last Olympics, they were 7 and 9. And, you know, they've been brought up with stream television, right? So the idea of ads is not something they were particularly familiar with. At one point in one of the breaks, there is an ad for a company, which I won't name, it starts with a piece of plastic flying out of a out of a rubbish dump, and it finds its way to the ocean. It falls into the ocean, and it's this beautifully captured cinematography piece. It sort of floats down, and all of a sudden this fish appears, and the fish goes towards to eat this piece of plastic. And just before it does, this hand goes into the water and picks up this piece of plastic, puts it back into a boat, and then it cuts to black and says that this computer company is made, each of the PCs made from this computer company are made from 50% recycled plastic. And I remember watching it with the girls, and they just sort of just took a minute. And then at dinner that night, they said, "So is there plastic in the ocean?"
Yeah.
And then it was, "Yeah, sadly there is." Wait, so how does it get there? So we had this conversation, and what ends up happening 2 days later is that they come home from school. This is during lockdown and sort of teaching at school. They then go and get gloves and rubbish and trash bags, and they go and get the buddies in the neighborhood, and they go every afternoon for like 10 weeks and pick up rubbish around the neighborhood to make sure that plastic doesn't get into the waterways.
That's amazing.
And it was, right? And it was just like, we would have missed that because we've been desensitized to it, but young minds who have just gone, whoa, 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 what? We need to sort of reboot how we think about this. It was mind-blowing to see that. Such an amazing impact.
Yeah, absolutely. It's those moments that stop you in your tracks that feel important and feel, you know, hopefully like what sticks with people in the future. I think we could do better at that. We being, you know, the general population working in media could do better at that. It's not all just like slop that you have to sort through, because we are inundated with so many ads at all times, right? Like even just watching an Instagram story, you get an ad for like shoes and real estate and Prozac direct to your door, like all of these things that we are constantly bombarded with.
Yeah.
To have something that can cut through that is enormous. And I think that's why, you know, I'm probably biased about this because my background is in content and editorial, but to have something that is a story to be told and not just talking points is important. And I think is something that a lot of brands we work with have come around to in a big way in recent years, because they know that there are going to be those ads like that people will talk about and it'll stick with you and you'll think about it. And to have, you know, creative freedom with the creators with whom we work, and also on the B2B side, to have that creative freedom to bring a brand to life in a way that makes sense and sticks with people is a difference maker, plain and simple.
What advice do you have for smaller companies that are looking to be involved in these brand partnerships with these larger players? I mean, you mentioned Lenovo before with the creator side. You know, it can be, I'm sure, pretty daunting to sort of think about how would I ever become part of that narrative and that story? I mean, obviously your team will play a brokering role to try and work out how that all fits. But if somebody is thinking about this and they're a smaller kind of brand, what's your advice if they're not going to work with you and the Smooth team? What are you telling them to think about?
Yeah, I think a lot of it boils down to really knowing your story. There are a lot of partnerships that I think fail to really come to fruition because it's just, I want a big brand. I want to work with this big brand. This is my goal, right? But I think you really have to know, number one, what got you to where you are. And number two, how you want to tell that story to the world. Like what is the elevator pitch of what you can accomplish or what you hope to do? And having just like real clarity on that. It is sort of the theme of this season of life with Smooth and what we're working on right now is just relentless focus, inspired definitely by our time at Morning Brew, but a relentless focus on what we're doing. How can we keep repeating this story, the story that we tell ourselves, because that impacts what happens. That impacts who we become and what we become as people and certainly as brands too, as we're trying to kind of build something meaningful. And so I'd say, you know, the number one most basic thing to do is to know that story, to know your community, and to know how you can storytell what you know to that community. I think that is really like elemental to me.
I get that. And so, you know, much has changed. I mean, from 3.5 years of building Smooth, this landscape continues to evolve pretty significantly. If you were to give your sort of thoughts on the trends that are emerging beyond community, which I think we've all agreed is very, very important, what are some other trends that people should keep an eye out for in this new evolving media landscape?
Yeah, I think, you know, something that we maybe spend a little too much time thinking about is this idea of creator burnout that I think is important to recognize, just so that we can kind of set appropriate expectations. When, you know, COVID hit and it was spring of 2020 and everybody was stuck at home and you couldn't order a ring light on Amazon because everybody wanted one, because everybody wanted to post stuff on TikTok and become a creator. And many people started what have become lucrative, impactful careers during that time. But it turns out it's really tough to make yourself sort of the product, to whether it's like, you know, a lifestyle influencer or somebody who is an educator, there is a lot of risk in that. And so what we try to do is to mitigate that risk as much as possible, to give creators the resources that they need to scale their businesses without totally going, you know, bonkers insane. And to level set with the brands that we're working with so that they understand, you know, these are appropriate expectations to have around timeliness of deliverables. These are appropriate expectations to have around, you know, what a creator can and can't do. And so for us to kind of be, that, you know, like mediator, I guess is maybe one way to put it, is important to us and something that we try to be, pretty stringent about. That's certainly one thing. I think the other sort of bigger, more seismic shift that we consider a lot at Smooth is this idea of, you know, media is fractured. And that is not necessarily something that is a new revelation, but I do think that the results of that fracturing are changing. When I was getting started in my journalism career, the idea of media being fractured was really just like, pivot to video was what everybody talked about. In 2015, you could basically get Facebook ads for free. So everybody pivoted to video because that's what Facebook wanted. And then Facebook changes its mind. And then, you know, 20% of the media industry loses its job, if not more. And so that was really what people were talking about when I started. Now I feel like we're in a sort of different stage of media fracturing away from these like big behemoth traditional media brands, where we're talking about the more specific community that we started this conversation with. That is really where the most valuable interactions can happen. And that's not to say that, you know, the New York Times is going to go under. Well, they're certainly not because of like Wordle and recipes and all that stuff. It's just a better run business. But, you know, it's not to say that traditional media will cease to exist, but it is to say that there are much more specific ways to get exactly what you want as the internet grows and as people enjoy the fruits of this democratization of the internet and of the ability to create content. So we've tried to really, you know, lean into that. And we believe that there is still a lot of wonderful runway in B2B media that we feel very excited to participate in. It's not all doom and gloom, as some publishers might suggest. There's a lot of really great stuff that's still ahead. It's just really, it comes down to knowing your audience and not being afraid to be super specific. Like the more specific, the better, I think is really the, you know, operating thesis here. It's we want to get into the nitty gritty. If you have an audience that's, you know, 20,000 people smaller because you went that much more specific, fine by me, because that means that you know them even better. You can speak to them even more effectively. You'll have higher engagement. And ultimately that matters for a lot of the brands that we're working with. So that's my soapbox of the day.
No, that makes a huge amount of sense. Kinsey, you've been hugely generous with your time today. We're going to get to the rapid fire in a second. Before we do, one final question. We all appreciate, at least you and I, appreciate that there is a really important role for partnerships to be played in a lot of parts of life, but in particular what we're talking about here in media and something between the brands that we think are really important pairings. What do you think leaders are missing about the role of partnerships in brand? Because we're fortunate to work with fantastic companies that have gone, you know, we can't do it all, right? We realize that and we're good for that. And then there are a big chunk of organizations that go, no, we'll vertically integrate. We can take care of it. And often they end up finding out the hard way that that's actually probably not true. So, you know, what do you think people are missing about the value of partnership-driven growth?
Focus. Again, the theme of this season is like just focus, because there's always going to be the temptation, I think, to do everything. And that is something that, you know, for a lot of people who are business leaders, you don't really end up being in that position by accident. You're probably at least some element of like a highly motivated person who has a lot of big goals and ambitions and all of that stuff. And so there is that temptation to say, well, I'm just going to do it all because if I don't, someone else is going to do it first. I think that that is short-sighted. And you know, when we talk about partnerships, often we at Smooth consider brand partnerships, advertiser, advertisee, creator who's bringing this message to their audience. But I think there's also just like the strategic partnerships beyond that, that are, you know, we don't want to start our own publishing platform. Like we know Beehive, we worked with Tyler at Morning Brew, the CEO, and we know that this works. Like, let's use it. Let's invest in that partnership. Let's make the time to give them feedback. Let's create a back and forth relationship. And it works really well for us because that's one thing that we don't have to do. You know, it doesn't make sense for us to build that. Of course, there's always the temptation to want to build everything. And maybe, you know, an enterprise tech example is not the best one, but you know, we have tried to stay really, really focused. And I think that it is a useful, you know, regimen to be in, regardless of your industry, regardless of your specialty, to know what you can do better than anybody else. Like what is not there that you can do? It's something that we always ask before we started any new media product at Morning Brew and certainly today. Are you just making it because you feel like you should? Or are you making it because it doesn't exist and you have a great idea that will be value add to a person consuming it and to the business that you're building? And I think that it's a good question to thought exercise to go through really regardless of your industry.
I love that. All right, let's get into the rapid fire so we can get to it. You good to go?
Yes, let's do it.
All right. So question number one, complete this sentence. Partnership is...
Very important. No, I want to redo. Okay. Partnership is knowing your strengths.
What content are you loving at the moment? And it doesn't need to be business related content. It can be anything.
I will give you not business related. I have been really, really loving this emergence of Substack creators who are unearthing vintage fashion finds. I think it is an enormous service. Sorting through eBay it sucks the life out of you. And so to step in and say, here are the keywords to search for if you want a top that looks like this, genius. I love it. I love those Substacks.
I can think of at least two people who I'm going to have to pass it on to. All right. What's the worst piece of advice you've received and why?
The worst piece of advice I ever received was from my headmaster in high school, who said that I was making a huge mistake going into journalism because it was a dying field. And to him, I would like to say, no, it's not. It's just evolving, same as every other industry. I think maybe the broader lesson from that is don't let anybody who isn't in a position that you want to be in tell you how to live your life. You know, like take advice from people whose, you know, decisions you want to emulate and whose life you admire, and disregard the rest.
I love that. All right. When you see potential for a new partnership, what's the first thing you do to turn that potential into action?
Understand the stakeholders, understand the product, do my best to really get a clear view of, you know, what goes beyond, hey, this is a cool brand, or like, hey, this is a cool creator. I really want to understand what makes them different. And I want to understand how they are trying to tell their story. That is a big theme, as I imagine the last hour has suggested to the listeners.
Indeed, it's very, very important. And last one, what is one, and I should say, every time I ask this, I've got to evolve this question. People often can't just do one, and you're welcome to have as many as you like, but what's one thing you're grateful for right now?
I'm so grateful for my life. I think right now I'm in a real phase of like, and not that this is something that's phase goal, but I feel like the older I get, the more I really appreciate my family. I want to spend more and more time with them. I want to maximize the amount of time that I get to spend with my parents. And I think I have a lot more, you know, respect and admiration and appreciation for what they have done and what my family has done to help me to get to this point. And I always feel grateful for them, but I feel like, especially right now, I am so grateful for, you know, guidance and love and support, especially in, you know, starting a business. My parents never once were like, is that really a good idea? They always have been very supportive of the risks that I have taken, and have always been there, whether they pay off or not.
Amazing. So Kinsey Grant, where can people go and find out more about the work you're doing, the places that you're helping to evolve? Where should we send people?
You can go straight to the Smooth Media website. It is smoothmedia, SMOOTHMEDIA. .co.co. And we have all sorts of information there. We're on social media too, maybe a little less than we should be, but head to our website and feel free to check it out. And if anybody is interested in reaching out directly, I welcome cold emails. As I mentioned, I have a lot of experience in responding to people. So you can feel free to email me. I'm Kinsey, K-I-N-S-E-Y at smoothmedia.co.
Amazing. Thank you so much for your time today, Kinsey. And I'm looking forward to seeing where this evolves. And just from a personal point of view, thank you for bringing with that team Morning Brew to life to sort of pioneer the way that news can be, because it really created a bigger shift than I think most people give it credit for. And I really did appreciate it. So thank you. I'm excited for our next conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much, Phil. It was a real pleasure. And I am happy to be on the show. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the end of this episode of Partnership Plus. If you like what you heard, you can share this episode via text message. And if you'd like to build your business partnership muscle, my free weekly newsletter called Wednesday Partnership will help you do just that. You'll find a link in the show notes. Finally, I'm big on encouragement and love to see people be in motion towards their ambitions. So if you know someone who might be struggling, reach out to them with a quick message of encouragement. It could change their life. Thanks again, and I'll see you in the next episode.